So my friend is in town this weekend, and we were just hanging out. And we decide the second night that she's here that we're gonna go out to a couple like bars, like dive bars, nothing too crazy. We'd gotten dinner, and we go to the first bar, and we're like, okay, this isn't really the best vibe. We get a couple drinks, and then we go to the next bar, and it's a local bar here in San Diego. And we're like, let's go drink some beer, shoot some pool, have a good time. Well, there's only two pool tables in this bar. And those are the only pool tables in all of this town, OB, San Diego. And so we're kind of, mystified by that, but whatever. We're like, let's go play around a pool. And we go up to the guys, we're like, we'll play winner. So we're playing the winner, and these guys are getting drunker and drunker, and we keep playing rounds with them, and they're fun guys, nothing too serious. We mix up the teams at one point, and while the other side, like my friend and the one of the guys are shooting pool, I don't know, it was their turn. I turn to the guy next to me, and I'm like, hey, you're in the restaurant industry, like you're probably surrounded by a lot of drugs, right? And he's like, yeah, I am. And I was like, I think he was asked, like, he thought that I was asking for, like, oh, can you, like, hook me up with your plug? And I turn to him,
That
I'm like,
really
hey.
feels like the reason you asked that question.
So I turn to him and I'm like, hey, I do Narcan trainings. Would you like some Narcan? And would you like to be trained on how to use it? And he's like, yes. And so, in the middle of a dive bar while playing pool, I gave a Narcan training on Saturday.
I'm proud of you. That's a cool story, Naomi. I'm glad you can teach drug dealers how to resuscitate their,
Okay, I don't
what do
know
you
if he's a
call a
drug dealer.
drug, a
A
customer?
customer,
I'm
yeah.
not sure.
I don't know if he
Yeah, I
was
was
a
gonna say
drug
victim,
dealer.
but that seems very like 1980s war on drugs rhetoric-y.
It definitely was. Yeah, it definitely sounded that way. No, but like, I don't know if he was a drug dealer. I just know that like he was a sous chef at like one of the local restaurants. And I was like, every single person in the service industry that's behind like the curtain or whatever is definitely like doing some sort of drugs.
Yeah, that certainly tracks.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my story. I hope you enjoyed it.
It's a great story, Naomi. We can play the intro music now.
Okay.
Da 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 da. Welcome back to Why Will No One Date These Guys? Naomi, this is the first podcast of the year of our Lord 2024, and I think the very first thing we need to do is change up how we describe this, because we've clearly gone in a different direction in 2023, and we'll probably
Yeah.
continue in that direction in 2024. I think this is a podcast now discussing the culture and media that dictates and informs sex, dating, and relationships in the modern era. What do you think about that?
Dang, I really wish I heard what you said.
Yeah, you keep cutting out on my end too. I'm saying we are a podcast discussing the culture and media that informs people's perceptions of sex, dating, and relationships in this modern era.
I think that's a great way of describing our podcast because we definitely don't talk about straight up sex, relationships, or dating anymore. We talk about the media and the things surrounding those, the influences of dating.
I have a book about sex. I'm excited to talk about my book on sex, but we're not there yet. We have other books to discuss. Lots of Steve Harvey, lots of
But again, that's content surrounding like the topic, the original topic.
Yeah. Yes, point taken.
Yeah.
Naomi, before we get any further into our topic of today's episode, which is setting us up for a year of success in 2024, I do want to sample our very first drink of the year, and that is Watermelon Poppy. Yet again, I am sampling sodas that really aren't sodas. They're just like flavored sparkling water, and I've been disappointed by most of them. I don't think that's going to change. I don't think you can do a tasty watermelon soda without having lots of sugar and artificial flavors in it. So let's find out. It's weird. I
Why?
don't hate it. It's like a red Jolly Rancher, like a fruit punch adjacent flavor.
Red
I
is
don't
cherry.
love it. Sure. It's got that like Kool-Aid taste to it. You want to try a drink?
Yeah, my drink is the Trader Joe's Cranberry Clementine Water. It's the sparkling water. It just tastes like club soda.
It's giving club soda.
It's giving club soda.
Damn. What a disappointment. I hope the rest of 2024 is not nearly as disappointing as these two drinks we've tried.
Joel,
we really weren't setting ourselves up for success.
We really aren't, but I do have to say that if you're going to say it's giving, as in it's giving something, that's definitely like a Gen Z thing, and I need to tell you the new Gen Z term, which is gap.
Oh, okay. But, ooh, that's hot. That packs a punch. What does gap mean, Naomi?
It means she got a fat ass.
So when do you use it in a sentence for me? Is it just like pointing at someone and being like, gat? Or is it like, she gat? Or
I don't know. I've seen it on shirts, though. It's spelled G-Y-A-T-T. I think it's like, oh, she's gat that gat. But I don't know. I don't know. You can't ask me. All I know is that when I used to nanny for kids and they used to come home and tell me the new like slang terms, I never knew what they were talking about. And I later had to look them up on Urban Dictionary.
You know, capitalism breeds innovation. And I've been to Venice Beach in Los Angeles a couple of times. And there's three businesses along Venice Beach. The first is marijuana doctors who formerly would just like give you a marijuana prescription for literally any reason. And like every 15 feet, there's another marijuana doctor. And now I don't know if they're still there. I've been there in a couple of years. I presume they're probably now like just straight up dispensaries or whatever. The second was like fruit stands selling like lots of sliced fresh fruit. And I'm sure that was great. I'm sure they, you know, squeezed some tajine or like lime juice on it. It was wonderful. I'm sure great thing when you're out and on, you know, Venice Beach for a day. And the third one was t-shirt shops that just sold dozens and dozens of t-shirts with Marilyn Monroe, often like posed with like two guns in her hands or like smoking a fat blunt. I don't know why they chose Marilyn Monroe, but that was like universally the person who was on the majority of the t-shirts. And I'm picturing now there's going to be a bunch of t-shirts with just Marilyn Monroe and the words gat underneath, like maybe Marilyn Monroe, and she's in the, like, you know, she's doing the thing where like her dress is lifted up because the air vent underneath.
Yeah.
She's like, ooh, so naughty, and it just says gat underneath it. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that next time I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah, because that happens so often. I know that you just have this love for Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, Naomi, it's getting a little late. I should tell our listeners right now, we are recording like the week before Christmas. And so it's getting a little late, but I will see if I can squeeze in a custom t-shirt order under the wire just for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I will never wear it.
Damn, disappointing. Naomi, speaking of disappointing things, let's talk about 2023.
Period,
because at
King.
The beginning, yeah, at the beginning of 2023, we made some predictions about how the year would develop in terms of dating and relationships, and some of them panned out and some of them didn't. I guess what I'm more interested in, because we can definitely discuss all of the horrible predictions Joel came up with that did not pan out in any way, shape, or form. I'm interested in discussing the manifestation we had for the year, which was not just 2023 as like a year to reflect upon. It was 2020 Rigatoni. And the whole idea of having this pun name was that you were going to do things related to your hobbies and endeavors, right? You're going to do more pasta. You're going to do more art. You're going to read more, right? It was a year of like new experiences. Now, keep in mind, this comes after 2020 Too Much Fun. And that was a year where you were supposed to do all sorts of exciting stuff. And 2023 was adjacent to that. I totally accept it. But it was its own thing. Because 2020 Too Much Fun was like, go skydiving, right? Go ride an elephant. It wasn't necessarily related to self-improvement. And 2023, I think, leaned more into that. So I'm interested. Tell me, how did you self-improve in 2023?
I definitely feel like it was a lot of mental improvements. I don't really, I feel like I'm definitely more active. Like my step tracker definitely told me that I've been more active in the last 4 months than I was in the 8 months prior to that. But we'll ignore that. I definitely think that I'm just a stronger person mentally now. I think I attribute that to the things that have happened throughout this year. But I also attribute that to the fact that I moved states. And it's really hard to do that. And I moved away from my family and all I've ever known to pursue a degree at UCSD, my second degree. I don't know why I decided to do it. Who needs 2 degrees? Am I right, ladies? But I feel good. I feel powerful. I definitely read a lot more too. Books that weren't all smut, so improvements.
Nice, nice. No, I'm proud of you for that, Naomi. Did you cook any good food?
I did. So I've made this in the past, but I kind of like perfected some recipes this year. The first one being the Gigi Hadid spicy vodka pasta, because that is an all-time favorite of mine. The second is cauliflower parmesan. So it's like chicken parm, but like cauliflower parm, where you like cut your cauliflower into steaks and then you make your own sauce, which I make the spicy vodka sauce for that. And then I put like mozzarella and parmesan and, you know, those good traditional Italian cheeses on top. So just a lot of Italian food, I feel like. I have a certain attachment to it. It's comforting. It's like a pot roast. Fair.
Now, may I make the suggestion that we link some of these recipes in the description of this episode so our viewers can learn how smart we are for finding these recipes and barely tweaking them at all?
Yeah, I mean, the last thing, I didn't really make this, but someone made this for me, which was probably my favorite recipe of this year, which was braised short ribs, and made it with some like mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. And they made the mashed potatoes. It was Len, by the way, in case anyone was wondering. I don't know why I unnamed him at first. He roasted garlic before, like in the oven, and then he put the roasted garlic in the mashed potatoes, but it was still like chunked, and it was, oh my god, with the braised short ribs in like a red wine sauce, it was so good. It was so good.
He wouldn't kiss you for a week, and you scared off all the vampires in the 10-mile radius, but it was worth it. It was worth it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice.
Tell me about your year. Tell me about it. Hit me with it.
Okay, I mean, I want to continue the topic of food because I made some really good recipes this year. I was trying to do more like Korean recipes this year, and I did quite succeed on that front. I really got pulled in a bunch of different directions based off of what my CSA bag every 2 weeks was giving me. So, you know, not necessarily a direction I wanted to go, but I definitely expanded my culinary horizons. A couple of standout recipes. So I eat vegetarian, and, you know, pretty much all of these are vegetarian for obvious reasons. I did a crispy chickpeas with a barbecue gochujang sauce. It's a very similar to like a traditional Korean bar food, you know, like Korean wings or something. But it was like really tasty and meaty and fulfilling, and I was super happy with that. I did a Brussels sprout and butternut sauce gratin with goat cheese. That was excellent. It was very, you know, wintry. It was very seasonal. It tasted excellent. And, you know, I'd love to put it in like a pie crust or something, have like a Brussels sprout, goat cheese, pot pie or something. I did a Earl Grey salted caramel chocolate and almond cake. This was something that Lauren had quite a while ago, and she requested it for her birthday. And I came up with, you know, a recipe that was a variation of a couple of different versions online, and she seemed to appreciate
it. It was really good. It was so good. It was, oh my god, it was delicioso.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, one thing that I'm really enjoying, I think, more as I age is the subtlety of flavor. You know, chocolate cake kind of just hits you in the face. It's like, what up? Mm-hmm. I'm chocolate. And, you know, Earl Grey is, you know, like, oh, I'm going to slip in under your radar. But, you know, I find, you know, a lot of the subtle flavors you think about more. It's not as one note. You know, you've had a million chocolate things before. It's difficult to have a standout chocolate experience. You kind of know what you're getting. And, you know, when you have more subtle flavors, that's always enjoyable. And then mango pie. Gotta say, mango pie. Find yourself a recipe, ladies and gentlemen. You can do a frozen mango pie where you have like a mango sorbet in a crust. You can do like a mango custard and have like, you know, kind of an eggy mango mixture. But either way, they're phenomenal. They're very bright. They're very tasty. They're a great way to use up, you know, on the off chance you somehow end up with a bunch of mangoes that aren't horribly overpriced at the grocery store. I would strongly recommend it. And then most recently, Lauren and I went to a restaurant and had an incredible dessert that was composed of a pumpkin ganache, a cornflake crunch, candy ginger, Stilton cheese, and pear sorbet. And it doesn't sound like it should work. It was one of the best desserts I've ever eaten. I was just blown away. And I'm trying to recreate it. The only step that I've been able to nail right now is pear sorbet. Get yourself some pears, kind of boil them into a sugar syrup, blend it up, and you get, you know, a kind of a grainy, sweet pear syrup. And the graininess is important because when you turn it into a pear sorbet, it still kind of has the texture of eating a pear. That doesn't sound too desirable, but like it's very difficult to nail like the perfect ripe pear. You know, pears have like a 2-hour window and they're like actually tasty and then they turn to mush. And this is a great way of taking an otherwise kind of bland and mushy pear and turning it into something that's like really tasty and delicious. So we will link some of those recipes in the description. Look out for those. There's some really good food out there in the world and lots of great ways to express yourself through doing so.
I've had the pear sorbet that you're talking about where it kind of has like that grittiness to it. And it doesn't sound appetizing when describing it, but it just is so phenomenal. It is. I remember having it. No. It's so good that I remember going to San Francisco as a kid with mom and it was just me and her. And I think I was like 6 or 8 at the time. And that was the only time that I've had it. And I still remember the taste and texture in my mouth. That was how good it is.
Cool. I'm glad that I could reunite you with memories from your past. other things we've been doing this year around the house, we've done a lot of like painting and kind of renovations. We've installed, you know, new shelving. We've really radically changed the layout of the house and the furniture within it. We've done a lot of paintings. We painted several rooms and we're working very, very slowly on painting our kitchen cabinets a much more attractive color. We've been given a lot of leeway by our landlord, which is deeply appreciated. And, you know, we don't own the house, but it's nice having a place you can experiment and kind of develop your own style, which is really nice. And the last big thing is I've been trying to do more furniture restoration. We do a lot of thrifting. We find a lot of like nice but kind of ugly furniture. And so I've, you know, developed some skills of stripping the furniture and restaining it and sanding it down and waxing it and making sure it's sealed. And I've turned some kind of gross pieces of furniture we've acquired around the valley into some like really attractive pieces. And I hope to continue that. There are some people online who do this and they make hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And I have absolutely no idea who's buying that, but maybe that's a future career path if needed. I'm not saying I'm anywhere close to those people, but it's really satisfying taking something that's like kind of grody and kind of disgusting and turning into like a really nice piece of furniture. And everyone who comes over to your house is like, oh, that's very fetching. And depending on what you're doing, you know, the extent of your project, you might be able to do it with, you know, just like one or two tools you don't have in your house already, turning, you know, a $10, $20 piece of furniture into something that looks like it's hundreds of dollars. It's a very satisfying process. And I enjoy working with my hands and being technical in that regard. I certainly don't do that enough in my normal job, which is pretty much just Excel spreadsheets. And being like, hey, I'm smarter than most people in my office because I know how to filter this Excel spreadsheet. Big brain on Joel. But yeah, those are the things I did for 2023. Those are some of the things that kept me intellectually rigorous and mentally improving. I guess now the question is, Naomi, what is 2024 going to be? What is the maxim? What is the idea people need to fixate on as they move into the coming year?
So I think I came up with 2020 too much fun. And then Lauren came up with 2020 rigatoni. And so is this your idea? Where did this come from?
I think Lynn might have come up with 2020 rigatoni. I mean, I'll give Lauren credit.
No, it was Lauren. I remember it because it was right before the new year. And Len had just started making pasta. And that's what it was. That influenced her.
Okay.
Yeah, but I remember you talking. You were like, I can't take credit for this. I have to give it to Lauren. Whose idea was this one? Because Joel pitched this idea to me at the beginning of the before we started recording, and I was like, I like this, but who came up with it?
It was me, which means next year Lauren has the unenviable task of coming up with a rhyme for 2025.
No, it's me. I already have it. It's 2020.
Okay.
It's 2020 high five, because it's like, you made it. That's it. You survived. Good luck.
Beautiful. So for 2024, I was thinking, and this is going to sound stupid, bear with me, audience, do not turn off your podcast player when I say this. Don't be like, well, they've lost the plot, no more. 2020 door. Oh my God, Naomi, I'm looking in real time. I can see through the podcast player. People are deleting their downloads. Oh my God, Naomi, people are anti-liking us on Spotify. Naomi, our Patreon numbers are dropping like a rock. Oh my God.
I'm going to attribute all of our year names to why we have such a low rating on Spotify.
Yeah. It's the single episode no one listens to. That's the reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So 2020 door, Naomi. We've talked a lot about relationships. We've talked a lot about toxicity in relationships in this year. And I think a coming theme, especially in an election year, will be people recognizing that sometimes their partners, sometimes the people closest to them aren't going to change. Unfortunately, as we're going to discuss a little bit later, as we talk about predictions for 2024, I really think there's going to be a rise in toxic masculinity in 2024. I really think there's going to be a rise in people parroting the opinions of political leaders, say presidential nominees. And there's going to be some very sexist things said. There's going to be pushback against women asserting themselves for, you know, their right to an abortion. There's going to be pushback against, you know, women trying to defend the rights of trans individuals. There's going to be pushback against pretty much women just doing whatever. And so I think 2020 door embodies this idea that sometimes certain relationships are just a lost cause. Don't stick in it. Don't feel like you have to, you know, salvage it. Sometimes just give up the, you know, shitty person that you're dating and move on with your life. Now, it doesn't just apply to relationships, because I think there's plenty of people in happy relationships who this would not apply to, and I don't want to give some maxim that, like, only applies to people in shitty relationships. 2020 door also refers to using your time effectively. This is something I feel I've gotten a lot better at in 2023, is when I'm watching a movie, and, you know, I'm by myself, I'm not, you know, with other people, it'd be weird if I did this with other people, and I'm not jiving with it, I'm not like, I'm gonna, you know, put up with it and hope it gets better, I just turn it off. I'm like, hey, not for me, I'm moving on with my life. If I'm playing a video game and it hasn't latched on in the first 2 or 3 hours, I'm giving it up, moving on with my life. If I'm reading a book, I'm going to flip through it, see if there's anything better, give it up. I think it's really, really important that people not waste their time with shitty media. And this is going to be especially important as AI starts churning out all sorts of shitty media, whether it be videos on YouTube, whether it be long-form movies actually being created using entirely AI, whether it be, you know, books on Amazon, you know, lots of ebooks are being generated right now with that. But you got to realize sometimes it's just not worth it. Sometimes you got to use your time more effectively, and you should not waste it on things that are low quality and suck. So 2020 door, see the door, walk out the door, close the door behind you, move on with your life. That's the maxim I think we need to talk about.
It's called the 10-minute rule, also known as the lemon law. So if you're on a date with somebody that you're not jiving with in the first 10 or 20 minutes, you lemon law them and you just say, this isn't going to work out, and you leave. Or if you're watching a movie and the first 10 minutes you're not jiving with it, you pause the movie, you reassess, you say, is this worth my time moving forward watching a super shitty movie? And in Joel's case, that's every single movie, because he has not liked a movie since the beginning of time. But yeah, that's the rule. 10 minutes, reassess. If you don't like it, keep going.
Untrue, Naomi. Everything Everywhere All at Once was wonderful. I saw Bottoms this year, lesbian comedy Bottoms. That was phenomenal. Past Lives, I was big fan. Into the Spider-Verse, oh, excellent animation there. I like things, I just am a pretentious douchebag about it. Come on, you know this.
Yeah, it's okay, it runs in the family.
Yeah. Okay, any thoughts on 2020 door? Do you want to fight me? Do we want to put in, you know, 2020 score? Have more sex? 2020 more?
No,
I think more good things.
I feel like it honestly, like, it goes, it tracks. I think it's original. It's not, you know, it's not overdone. I like it.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to touch base on this in a couple of months, and I expect to hear some of the things you've dropped, whether it be classes, whether it be going to nudist beaches and, you know, staring at people creepily.
Oh my God, it was once, it was three times, four times.
Lauren and I did talk, and we're like, you know, we could get Naomi a pair of binoculars for Christmas.
Honestly, I would really enjoy that. I love binoculars. I think that'd be a great investment.
I bet you do.
Not for that reason. I just really like watching, like, dolphins and, like, whales and stuff. But they're, like,
yeah,
they
dolphins
could be, like, far out there. Oh, okay, I'm done talking about this with you.
There's other hairless mammals Naomi enjoys watching more than dolphins.
They are definitely not hairless, I can tell you that much.
No.
No. Nobody manscapes on that beach.
Okay, so we got our name. 2020 door. 2020 door. 2020 door. Love it. Naomi, let's talk about predictions for this year. You ready?
Let's go. You go first.
Okay. And by this year, I mean 2024, not 2023, the date we are actually recording. So I have three articles from The Knot, which is a wedding planning website, from Tinder, and from Bumble. I think our listeners are probably familiar with them as now. And they have some metrics about what happened in 2023 and a couple of predictions for 2024. So let's work through the Tinder list year in swipe 2023. I think a lot of this is trend data from 2023 that will inform kind of some of the stuff that happens in 2024. So, global dating trends. Do you have this article open, Naomi?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So the first thing they say is that always on is the dating emoji of the year. It's the emoticon that's a double-sided arrow with the words on and exclamation mark. And apparently that was the most commonly used dating emoji of the year, which I find kind of crazy. I would think hearts or smiley faces would probably be a little more popular. But they claim this means that, like, let's do it energy is ruling and, like, people trying to be more active and, like, take initiative in dating. And, okay, I kind of buy that. Second thing they say is NATO dating was the diplomatic approach. They describe this as not being attached to an outcome. So more people dating and not trying to, like, immediately project an entire future relationship on whatever partner they were with, just kind of vibing with people and hoping, you know, good stuff happens. But if it doesn't, not being overly concerned. Do you buy that?
Sure. I don't know. I can't really say anything. I, like, haven't, none of my close friends are, like, actively dating, and I haven't, like, actively dated in a while. So I think it's kind of hard for me to be like, oh, yeah, this is a dating trend. You know what I mean? So skip me. Don't That's ask fair. My opinion. I don't know.
They say the main characters are becoming more important. So, what they mean by that is people are accepting that not every date's going to be great, and they're using them more as an opportunity to collect stories about horrible dating and experiences rather than, like, again, expecting every single date is going to turn into a relationship. As someone who loves cultivating stories about people in my life and sharing them excitedly with my friend circle, I totally get that. I personally have a share, and I know you have a share of really bad dating stories. I do think that's kind of making the best of a horrible situation. No one really likes the dating process, and so if you turn it into more of a game, you probably will do better in the long term mentally. Do you buy that?
Yeah. Was I supposed to agree? I thought you were going somewhere with that further than you did. Okay.
Yeah. Couple of things they say that apparently yerba mate is becoming increasingly popular.
What?
I know there's a, look, I'm talking about what Tinder's saying. If you have a problem with it, bring it up with Tinder.
I'm
parroting what they're saying, and, like, I agree with you, it's a little bit weird. I know kava is becoming increasingly popular, and that's another non-alcoholic beverage. But I think the idea here is, like, up until probably the early 2000s, the idea of going on a date with someone typically would involve, like, alcohol, you know, liquid courage, meeting at a bar, yeah, maybe grabbing some food. And not only have, like, alcoholic drinks become increasingly more expensive, I think a lot more people are like, hey, I don't actually enjoy getting drunk that much. And so, no, I totally buy the idea that, like, non-alcoholic dating is becoming more popular. People are, you know, trying boba, they're trying slushies, they're trying the new McDonald's spinoff Cosmics and the churro slushies that they're selling there. They're probably looking for other things. And I think there's a degree of sophistication if you're like, hey, let's go, you know, drink kava, let's go drink yerba mate or something for our first date, that makes that person seem more interesting. I'm not saying it's a substitute for actually being an interesting person, but it's certainly a way to stand out if you, you know, are going out on dates with a lot of people. It's a way of differentiating yourselves from all the other individuals that they're going to encounter.
I just don't know how they picked yerba mate. Like, I get it. Like, it's on the trends or whatever, their data. But yerba mate? That's, like, so random.
Maybe it's the influence of South America on these dating trends. They talk a little bit about that near the bottom. In terms of trending interests, they say the top five trending interests were horror movies, hip-hop, tennis, voguing, and walking my dog. What does voguing mean?
I don't know. Hold on. Urban Dictionary.
You're the younger person. You should know this.
I do not know what that means. Oh, word of the day is primal play. Voguing. A dance move comprised of a series of poses imitating a model at a photo shoot. Voguing originated in the gay black subculture of ballroom in the 80s, and voguing became recognized in the mainstream with Madonna's song Vogue.
Yeah. So yet another thing straight white girls have stolen from black and queer allies. I can't believe this.
The sample sentence is, did you see that bitch voguing her ass off at the Sound Factory?
Okay, so I have a bone to pick, which is like, it'd be very easy for them to supply some data and just be like, this is based off of a sample of 250,000 people. And I don't see any of that. I'm presuming that, you know, they have so much data, they probably can pretty easily identify these trends. But even like Pornhub, for instance, is like, hey, here's the urine porn. We're going to give you all sorts of stats. And they give you like some interesting deep dives into the data, which they have, that it's easily accessible. So you don't have to just take their word for it.
You think they just pulled this interests, out of their butt? You think they just?
I don't know, man. There's some 180s here that are kind of crazy. In terms of most attractive interests, which I presume are like the interests that if they're on your profile means you're most likely to get a date, they say otaku, Japanese for obsessive fans of anime or manga, cheerleading, Pilates, biryani, and queer ally.
Biryani, like the food?
Like the food, like the rice dish with like meat and protein on top.
Oh, I love biryani.
I don't know if that's like people from India and Pakistan are becoming more attractive in the dating market. I also don't understand the otaku thing.
Okay, that makes sense. Like that, you know, like the anime, the anime culture is very large right now. I feel like the vast majority of people that like are on dating apps are there for, I'm just kidding. They're there for a reason. No, but I would say that it's very large. A lot more people are getting into it, so that makes sense to me at least. But also, it mentions at the top that Tinder is this is global data. It's not just like the United States. So it could be totally different.
So it's also countries. Yeah, it's also possible. So Asia, for instance, might have exploded on dating apps. It's also possible India exploded on dating apps.
India is in Asia.
That reflects that. Yeah. I think that's actually a really good theory. Most popular info in Tinder profiles, Naomi, they have relationship goals, the zodiac, height, pets, and smoking habits.
Like smoking weed or smoking like a cigarette?
I would presume cigarettes. I think smoking weed's pretty normalized, but hey, that's totally possible. I think this is helpful information because, like, if you don't have one of these things on your profile, you really need to have this on your profile. This is something that, you know, a lot of people are looking for. It's something that a lot of people care about. We really need to do that episode on the zodiac that we've talked about, you know, because there's a lot of things people put faith in and not always the best predictors of relationship outcomes and success.
Yeah.
Love styles, ranked, they say in order, time together, touch, thoughtful gestures, compliments, and presence. I kind of buy that. I think time together and touch are probably even more important after COVID. We're like, it was very difficult to spend quality time with people if you didn't live in the exact same building. Same with, you know, touch to a certain extent. I don't know if there's anything more to derive from this, but it is, I think, again, helpful as people kind of plan, okay, why am I not doing well in the dating world? What are things I can do to be more attractive?
No, I definitely agree.
Top communication styles, being better in person, being a big-time texter, being a phone caller, being a bad texter, and video chatter. That feels like garbage data. I don't know what to make of that.
Because, like, the vast majority of people want... Okay, the vast majority of people I know, let's start with that, want to be off their phones more, which makes them bad texters. So it's like you kind of got to meet in the middle there.
Yeah. Top pets in Tinder profiles, dogs, which were twice as popular as cats on dating profiles, followed by cats, don't have pets but love them, followed by all the pets, followed by pet free. So yes, if you are going to say anything about your love of animals, dog and cat are probably the best ones, but dog certainly wins in a dead heat.
I want to know the data behind, like, if you have a dog in your profile versus, like, a snake or, like, an iguana.
Interesting, interesting. So here's some global data that's interesting. Countries who ghost the least, top five are Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Canada, and Australia. So if you're looking for love, those are places where like people are most likely going to communicate with you and tell you if things aren't working out. Countries who reply the fastest, Korea, Singapore, United Kingdom, Germany, and United States. So if you're desperate, those are great places to move. No, I don't know what to make of that. I kind of wonder if like population plays a role. Like if the denser an area, the more matches you might have. So if you live in a place like South Korea, where they have some pretty dense cities, you probably need to be super responsive because people have moved on to other people who are more
Yeah.
responsive if you're not immediately communicating. I would
Yeah,
assume
that
the same of
tracks.
Singapore and the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Cities with the longest bios include Mexico State, Calgary, São Paulo, Toronto, and Los Angeles. So you have two on there, which indicate that, you know, the South American market is certainly up and coming. They also mentioned cities with the most photos include São Paulo, Calgary, Mexico State, Rio de Janeiro, and Glasgow. That kind of came out of left field. But yeah, Los Angeles having some of the longest bios. I wonder if that's like, you've seen me in such films as, and it's just, you know, people trying to market themselves. And then cities that reply the fastest include Busan, Chicago, Incheon, Seoul, and Los Angeles. I think Incheon is also in South Korea. Let me double. Yep, that is, I think, the second largest city in South Korea after Seoul. So, yeah, South Korea, big player in the international dating market. So yeah, that's the big stuff that Spotify, sorry, not Spotify, why am I saying Spotify? That Tinder was noted was happening in 2023. I think there's some helpful takeaways there for 2024 in terms of customizing your dating profile. I apologize, that one isn't really specific to, you know, the trends expected in 2024, but we do have an article that discusses that, and that is what Bumble's dating experts say.
Ooh, I want to read it. I want to read it. I want to read it.
Okay, go ahead.
Bumble says age is just a number. So Bumble daters are widening their age range filters. Engagement in social causes. So political and social causes we care about are intrinsic in our values and outlook on the world. Rebelling against self-improvement. There's been a trend towards self-optimization or striving to become the best version of yourself, whether that means taking a cold plunge at 5 a.m. or plugging in to self-help podcasts. This has left the majority of singles, 55%, surveyed feeling pressured to constantly seek personal improvement, with 1 in 4, 24% respondents feeling unworthy of a partner. Wow. Joel, how do you feel about that?
I'm not on a dating app. I don't have to participate in this.
Okay. Emotional intimacy is key. As we enter the new year, singles are focused on finding security, safety, and understanding in their romantic connections. That makes sense.
Okay, you're just blazing through these. Let's back up a second.
Okay.
So age is just a number. So people are increasingly open to dating people who are older and younger. I think that's really interesting because for a while, men have been reluctant to date anyone who's not like a super young woman, and women have been reluctant to date younger men. And so I think it's fascinating that it appears that both sexes are open to expanding their age ranges. So yeah, the age is just a number thing I find is interesting because it indicates that individuals are open to both older and younger people. Two in three people say that age is not a defining factor when dating, which seems like a big change. And 59% of women say they're more open to dating someone younger. Now, I have to wonder if that has to do with individuals who identify as progressive wanting to date younger just because they anticipate younger people are more likely to share the same values as people in their age range. Do you buy that?
I see what you're saying, but I also am interested to like dig further into this and see how much younger they're looking at. You know what I mean? Because if it's like a year or two, that's okay, that's understandable. But like, is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? You know what I mean?
That's fair. I mean, I think when the question is phrased as age is not a defining factor when dating, or I guess the question would be more like, is age a defining factor when you're dating? I think that probably means people are more willing to set their age sliders to a much wider range than they were before. That's
Yeah.
how I would read it. that's the question, I guess, it's fair. Yeah, it's like, how much further is that? And is that like men being like, yeah, I did an 18-year-old. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm 35. I love an 18-year-old girlfriend.
That's what
I don't think that's changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the reason I say the progressive values thing is because of the second point, engagement in social causes, where for 1 in 3 women, it's a turnoff if someone they're dating isn't aware of current social issues, right? 1 in 4 people on Bumble say it's key that their partner actively engages with politics and social causes, and that doing so makes them more attractive, right? That's a super helpful thing when like formulating a dating strategy. I'm not even saying this to be like cynical. I'm saying this, if this is something you do, you should be very clear about that on your dating profile. You should be very open about the fact that you care about certain issues or that you engage in certain stuff. I mean, don't be like a dick about it. Don't be like, oh, I'm the greatest person in the world. I volunteer at a food bank every week. Yeah, I mean, don't be a braggart, but like, don't shy away from it either. This is something that makes you more attractive to a large chunk of women. And so in the same way, I do think that ties closely to age, where it's like, we do know that younger generations are more progressively minded than older generations, and women in their 30s and 40s might be having frustrations with men in their 30s and 40s. You know, I was out at dinner yesterday with Lauren, and I saw a guy with a Blake Masters sticker on his laptop, and I'm like, you can do that? That's allowed? You can still be a fan of Blake Masters in the year of our Lord 2023? My God.
Yeah.
But I think women in their 30s and 40s might be like, I'm not sure I want to date the single men who are in their 30s and 40s. What about men in their late 20s? What about men in their early 20s? Yeah. And so I agree with you. I don't know how much we can infer about how wide this range has become, but I do think it's something we need to keep an eye on, because it's going to have big ramifications for all sorts of stuff. It's going to have ramifications for relationship patterns, you know, when people have children, because, you know, women who are dating much younger might be inclined to have children as quickly as possible, just, you know, so, you know, if children are a priority, they don't have any problems with fertility. It could be a defining thing for the next couple of years.
I'm honestly surprised that it's just 1 in 3 women, like, talk about how it's a turnoff if their person that they're dating isn't aware of current social issues. Like, that's surprising to me that is that low. Like, it's not low, but you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting that it's not more, because I feel like, especially now, especially after 2020, it would be more.
I agree with you, but I think you might be overestimating what percentage of the population of women is intimately involved in and follows current social issues. I think we overestimate how many people read a newspaper, follow the news, have a good grasp of, you know, political situations and whatnot. There
That's
are
really
some very
fair.
Loud people
yeah.
in our social media circles, but like, Twitter doesn't represent a majority of the American population, right? There's
yeah.
lots of people who, you know, get all of their news through Facebook or whatever, and they're perfectly fine with that. So I agree with you. I would have hoped that it'd be higher, but I can also imagine that just a lot of people don't follow the news to begin with.
I guess that's true. Yeah, I didn't really take that into account. It kind of, you yeah. only get your awareness of your circle.
The other thing I really want to touch upon is this rebelling against self-improvement trend, where people say that they feel they've been pressured to be like better versions of themselves. And as you said, 25% of people are like, I feel unworthy of a partner. And I think this rebelling against self-improvement as like a topic for 2024 is really, really positive, because so much of our like lives, at least for people who are younger, is heavily shaped by like false perceptions of our peers. We're on Instagram and we see the most perfect, unblemished Photoshop photo of like someone we went to high school with, and we, you know, feel shitty about, you know, how we look, but it's not a good representation of what they look like on a daily basis. It's not an accurate reflection of their lives. You know, I mostly post just travel and food photos on Instagram, and that is not a reflection of what I do on a day-to-day basis or the food that I consume. I just do it because I think they're pretty photos of things that I'd like to share. But I think ultimately that gives people a false narrative that I have a far more interesting life than I actually do. And so this idea that people are like actively rebelling against social media influences, they're actively rebelling against this idea they need to always be hustling, always need to be grinding, always needing to be like manifesting some better version of themselves, seems really positive. That does feel like a result of like years of discussions about therapy and the importance of mental health in our culture, because if people are no longer feeling that they need to fit some like imaginary ideal society is telling them to be, they're probably going to be happier in the long term.
No, I definitely agree. I kind of have beef with you though, because I said, Joel, what do you think about this? And you said, I'm not in the dating world, let's move on. And I was like, dang, okay. And then we came back to it. Okay, you couldn't just say this in the first place.
I needed to cover up the fact that I guess I was just feeling awkward because, you know, I'm a married man, Naomi, and I can't believe you'd accuse me of having any opinion on singledom culture, given that I'm tied down happily to a wonderful woman. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just spitballing right now.
Okay.
Let's get back on track. Tell me about open-hearted masculinity, Naomi.
Movies, music, fashion, and pop culture in 2023 prompted big conversations about masculinity and gender roles. I'm just gonna blame it mainly on the Barbie movie, but let's move on. When it comes to relationships...
I blame it on Oppenheimer.
When it comes to relationships, it seems that men have been taking note. 1 in 4 men surveyed state that they actively change their behavior in their romantic connections, becoming more vulnerable with people they're dating than ever before. For a quarter of men surveyed, this newfound openness has had a positive impact on their mental health, and 1 in 3, 32%, being open and vulnerable is most important aspect. Wait, for 1 in 3, being open and vulnerable is the most important aspect of the relationship. I think also to accompany this information, I would definitely say that there's been more of a trend to take the emotional labor off of women. I think that's the correct term. Emotional labor? Joel,
yes.
What am I thinking of right now? Yeah. I think that's it's not as big as it should be, but it's definitely more talked about this year than it has been in years past.
Yeah, I think focusing more on the mental health versus
playing the part
at discussions. To be emotionally abusive to their partners. Like, I'm doing my best to, like, deal with the hardships you give me, and I can't believe that you would, you know, step on my emotions and other stuff like that. I'm open to this. I think it's great that people are more cognizant of the importance of mental health and, like, discussing their feelings and being vulnerable. I, for the life of me, can't understand why someone would want to be with a partner who they feel they can't talk to about a lot of important stuff in their life. And it seems good in terms of long-term dating trends if people are more willing to be, like, reflexive and open and honest in their relationships. We've discussed before this idea that, like, there might be less relationships in the future based upon, like, how crazily our politics are diverging in America and in the West between men and women, but it's very possible that those are going to be happier relationships, the ones that do form as a result, and I think this could play a key role in that.
Okay. I definitely think, going back to your first point, I definitely think that this, it could to a certain extent be a I'm playing the part until I settle down type of thing. And then I'll actually show my true colors, because I definitely think that that's a big part of dating now is just the narcissism.
Ooh, exciting. I only want to discuss one more on this list, unless one other jumped out at you, and that is rejecting dating milestones. Bumble found that 1 in 3 women are no longer focused on adhering to certain relationship goals when it comes to their relationships. Only 1 in 5 women are seeking marriage on Bumble, whereby nearly 3/4 are looking for a long-term relationship. For a third of women respondents, they only want to date people who have the same perspectives as them. And for 1 in 8, this means actively avoiding friends and family who put pressure on them to reach certain milestones. Again,
wow.
I feel that's emotionally healthy. I think that indicates that there's going to be some major trends in dating relationships. And as we're going to get to in a moment, I think there's going to be a lot more articles about how women just need to suck it up and date Trump voters. We've already seen a couple from, like, the Washington Post, which are like, come on. And I think that that drum is just to be beaten louder and louder.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's do it. Let's jump right in.
Jump into what?
The knot.
Oh, yes. Let's do it. So the Knot. Knot is, of course, a wedding planning website. They have a lot of information about weddings, as well as a lot of links so that they can sell you things. They had an article titled 2024 is about to hit different with these new relationship and dating trends. This is written by Jamie Cuccinelli in November of this year. So they had some really interesting takes that I thought I buy. I'm surprised they went for some of them. The first one is being emotionally feral. And they claim that being authentic and focusing less on being aesthetically pleasing in a socially conscious way. So being emotionally authentic, being less focused on like what society thinks of you is going to be a big, big trend in 2024. They cite phrases like goblin mode. They talk a little bit about how more individuals care more about intimacy than having sex with people. We just talked about how Bumble was talking about how individuals care a lot more about their mental health. I buy this. I think more and more individuals are going to be open and honest about what they're looking for. They just don't want to waste their time. They have expectations about what they need in order to be happy in a relationship, and they're not going to put up with shit.
Okay.
Do you buy that?
No, I definitely do. I think it's definitely a part of our 2024 year trend, which is 2020 door. They're like,
I kind of hate it. The more bad we habits, say it.
These bad things. I mean, I definitely think that should be the. It does. We don't have to stick to that title. We can change it. We can throw that out the door. We can 2020 see it to the
more door. We talk about Lord of the Rings every week. We rewatch Lord of the Rings. Not a better fantasy series out there, fellas.
Yeah, every week we get together and we watch all of the Lord of the Rings movies every single week, and we just get subtly more and more burnt out the longer we do it, to the point where Naomi pulls all of her hair out and I quit the podcast.
Incredible. I love it. Second big trend that The Knot is predicting is a rise of parallel play. They describe this as the idea that individuals can pursue their own interests, hobbies, and activities independently while still being in a relationship. So I think this also ties into the whole, like, being authentic to yourself, this idea that individuals no longer feel the need to, like, put up with, I don't know if that's the right phrasing, or doing things with their partner that, like, they feel obligated to do. And I find I do this a lot with Lauren. We're both like playing video games in the same room, or like I'm reading and she's watching something on TV, or I'm working on my computer and she's like doing something on the coffee table. I like this idea that couples can share the same space and enjoy each other's presence while also not necessarily doing the same thing. There's this expectation in certain relationships, which is like you always have to be giving your partner attention. And I think that's just emotionally draining and not something a lot of people can do for long. And I think it's important to preserve some sense of like individuality and like pursuing your own passions, even within a relationship. And I like the idea that, and I buy the idea that parallel play will be increasing in popularity.
Parallel play sounds like really super kinky. Like it sounds, I think it's just because it has the word play in it.
Yeah.
Parallel doing, that's worse. But anyways, Joel kind of gave a couple examples of what parallel play is, but we'll give some more that were in this article reading together. So just sharing the space with your partner and reading different books, creative pursuits. So each partner can pursue their creative interests side by side. For example, one might be painting or sketching while the other one is writing or working on a craft project. Listening to music or podcasts. So partner can listen to their preferred music or podcasts or audiobooks using their headphones while spending time together. This respects individual tastes while sharing a physical space. And then home workouts. Engaging in individual workout routines at home is a form of parallel play. Each partner can follow their preferred exercise routine, creating a shared commitment to health and well-being. Which I think all of these are really great examples.
Wowza. Two others, and then we'll get into why everyone actually turned on this episode, and that's the horrible Joel predictions for the year. So two others from The Knot, living apart together. So they say that there's going to be a continued rise of couples who live apart from their significant other. New York Times apparently found in the 2022 U.S. Census that 3.89 million Americans were living apart from their spouses in 2022. That blows my mind. That's absolutely gobsmacking.
Meaning like they're married, but they're living apart?
Yes.
Did it say for what reason? Like financial or like other reasons?
Because
it could be. I'm not saying all of them, but it could be that none of these people could afford divorces. And they're technically still married.
I don't know. I'm browsing through the New York Times article, and it appears that a lot more people are living apart, partially driven by women's desire for like independence. It doesn't seem like these individuals are trying to get divorced. That could be the case. But I think it goes to this larger trend that we've talked about, which is just like people are frustrated with the existing limitations they placed on relationships and might be more willing to explore alternatives that were not nearly as popular a couple of years ago. So if dating, you know, people in your own age range is difficult, date people outside of what your normal age range is. If settling down with a partner is difficult, whether it be for finances or because, you know, the geographical location isn't right, maybe embrace this idea of living apart from your spouse. If, you know, you're finding it difficult to date, you know, people in your area, I don't know if that's a good example. I was going to get into polyamory and I don't know how to articulate this without sounding offensive. but I guess the point here is just there are lots of different ways people can break the mold of societal conventions surrounding relationships. And as people get more and more frustrated with what's like available in the dating market, they're probably going to be more likely to make these changes and be willing to put up with more of these alterations to like a traditional, what you might say, you know, heteronormative relationship and dating structure.
Okay, new take. Wow. Wasn't expecting that.
Okay, one last take, Naomi, and that is sex re-education. And that is, there's been a rise in resources that promote pleasure-based sex education. There's a lot of new apps we've seen. There's a lot of new websites that are explicitly about improving people's sex lives. One thing we've been looking into is a program called OMG Yes that interviewed several thousand women about like what they found sexually desirable and what they enjoy during sex. And now like markets that to people is like, oh, get our amazing videos that teach you how to like better pleasure your partner. But I think to a greater extent, if we accept the idea that people are more willing to talk about what they need in relationships, if we accept the idea that people are more willing to be like emotionally open, you're probably going to see more and more partners be like, hey, I'm not getting the sex I want out of this relationship. I'm not, you know, being sexually satisfied with what we currently do. And to that end, the idea that there's going to be more resources available, more people selling these programs, even, you know, more free stuff available to improve people's sex lives totally jives with me. I'm like, oh, I get that. Yeah. If people are unhappy and they are feeling more comfortable talking with their partners, they're more likely going to be exploring for, you know, ways to solve the problem rather than just let it fester like an open wound.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I definitely think that it's definitely overdue, though. Finding the clit, that is.
So, Naomi, we've talked about the predictions from the big dick companies in the dating game. We've talked about all of the ideas they have for what dating is going to look like in 2024. Do you want to talk about some of our predictions for 2024? I guess the question I should ask is, do you have any?
I do. I have a few. Just general trends, but I want to hear yours.
Okay. Now I should caveat this. I looked back at our notes from last year and was like, you didn't do too well, Joel. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. The six things I said last year were that unionization is going to be a big talking point on dating apps. COVID and people's like willingness to do certain things surrounding COVID is going to be a big talking point on dating apps. More people are going to be trying new hobbies, doing new things. Women needing to have kids discourse is going to explode in the media. There's going to be a rise of Twitter dating, and Elon Musk is going to produce like a Twitter dating app. And there's going to be a rise of metaverse dating. Regarding the Twitter dating and the metaverse dating, I think these predictions were wrong because I underestimated how bad Elon Musk was about running a company. And I didn't realize how quickly the metaverse would collapse. Believe it or not, there are actually programs online in the metaverse or what currently exists of it, where you can go and like flirt and interact with and even like make out with people using these sensory devices available for the metaverse.
But, what like, is it's, this? It's... Club Penguin?
I think more like Second Life. But yeah, like VR dating apps kind of make sense to me, especially if more people are video dating. But simultaneously, if no one owns the peripherals, if no one owns the technology, if companies aren't even using it, so people are like normalized and like accepting of the technology, it's not going to go anywhere. So yeah, I totally understand that that didn't go the way I wanted. I think the first four, arguably, I did pretty well on. I think lots of people are trying new hobbies. You know, after COVID, a lot of people wanted to explore and get better at stuff. I think there's been a large rise in discussions about women needing to have kids. More specifically, it seems to be discussions about how women can't have abortions, which amounts to effectively the same thing.
Yeah.
But I totally expect that's just going to continue. And then this is not something I can really like point to. I don't have the data from the dating apps, but I do imagine that, like, if people are more and more interested in dating individuals whose beliefs align with their own, this whole discussion of, like, unions and COVID is going to continue and be pretty popular. I just can't prove it, right? Like, the majority of people have pretty positive opinions towards unions in the United States. It's just, I don't know, you know, how often they bring it up in dating apps. It probably is tangential to a lot of other beliefs, but not necessarily. So, with that in mind, let's talk about 2024. I've got some swings, and I'm probably going to miss. I got nine predictions, Naomi.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say we could shoot back and forth.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you want to start?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. My first one is that several dating apps, Tinder, Bumble, OkCupid, major dating apps in the market, are going to have serious, serious problems in 2024 with AI chatbots ruining everything. These chatbots kind of already exist, but they're just going to get cheaper and cheaper to deploy. And the more people are using this technology in, like, their day-to-day lives, the more they're going to recognize, oh, I can use these and monetize them and, like, spam people with them. So, yeah, I think that's going to be an ongoing problem. I don't know how far it's going to get. It's very possible there's going to be additional, like, verification features put into place, but it's going to piss off a lot of people who use these dating apps and realize, hey, half the people I talk to, like, aren't actually real people.
Okay, I feel like that's like larger on social media than it is on dating apps, but I could totally see it happening on dating apps.
What do you got for me, Naomi?
I think there's going to be, so we have our birth rate is really low in this country, and I think that it's just going to continue to get lower, and contraceptive talk is going, obviously we've seen that, like, it's, women are not inclined to have casual sex as much, especially after the fall of Roe. I think that that's just going to continue, and women are going to be having less kids and less casual sex, less sex in general, actually.
I agree. I would go one step farther. Further in the same direction, but to a greater degree than Naomi. I believe that there's going to be a lot of conversations in the lead up to the 2024 presidential election about demographic crises in America. For years, you know, conservatives have been, like, kind of beating the drum about, oh my God, migrants are replacing white families. And I think it's just going to get worse and worse. And I think there's going to be a lot of mainstream agreement with the people who are parroting these demographic crisis talking points. There's going to be a lot of articles that are like, I don't like Trump, but he raises some good points about how white people are vanishing. I think a lot of discussions about access to birth control and women's abortion rights are going to be tied to this idea that white America is fading, whether that's implicit or explicit to their argument. And I think that's how Republicans are going to push their policies, whether they want to say so explicitly or not. That is going to be the rhetorical device they use.
Okay. Okay, hit me with your next one.
So this is tangential to the first one, but I do think it's separate. There's going to emerge an AI chatbot tool, if not multiple tools. And this whole tool is going to serve entirely to drive people from dating apps to OnlyFans. So this chatbot is going to be very basic. It's going to have a lot of features that already exist in existing apps. But basically, it's going to be a fake profile of someone that you start talking to on a dating app. And after, like, a few minutes back and forth conversation, this chatbot is going to direct you to someone's OnlyFans or exterior to the website. Be like, hey, you know, I enjoy talking with you. I'm wondering if you can, you know, support me on OnlyFans or something. But creators...
That already happens.
Does this already happen?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's chatbots, but I definitely know that there's been a large push of people on dating apps, as well as, like, places like Reddit and Instagram and other forms of social media that'll just send out their OnlyFans.
I get that that happens. What I'm saying is creators on OnlyFans need to monetize and reach as many people as possible in order to actually make decent money. I think we said when we were discussing, like, the Why Women Deserve Less episodes, that, like, the average creator on OnlyFans is making, like, $200 a year. And I think a lot of creators are going to find that if they can create a computer program that acts similar to them, like, hee hee hee, I'm so cute, ah, look at me. They can, you know, use that to drive hundreds, if not thousands of people at a time to their sites.
Okay.
Maybe this is, you know, super related to the first one. I feel it's a more specific version of that, but I'm willing to concede it's just a variant of the first one as well. But the idea here is the dating websites, the dating apps are going to get progressively more worse because so many people are trying to turn them into a platform just to monetize people who are desperate and looking for any form of affection.
Yeah.
So will it manifest exactly like that? Not sure, but that seems like the likeliest outcome right now. The technology is already there. It's just a matter of getting it into people's hands.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking what you're talking about, I totally understand, exists right now, but you're literally describing, like, one person texting back and forth, and after a few minutes is like, I want you to go to my OnlyFans. I'm thinking a computer does it 100 people at a time, so greatly increasing the spread of individuals there.
I don't know if it's a bot or not, you know what I mean? Like, it could you could totally set up a bot so quickly to, like, do that, you know what I mean? So I don't know who's doing it. I don't know if it's a person, like, I don't know. But all I know is that it is happening on a lesser scale than what you're describing. My next trend that I think is going to happen in 2024 is there's going to be a very high divorce rate. It is an election year. Ooh. That is, and it's a controversial election year. And even, I feel like it's even more controversial election year than it was in 20. Okay, I can't say anything because 2020 was like a pretty freaking controversial year. But I definitely think that 2024 is going to be controversial, if not more controversial than 2020 was. And that's going to cause a higher divorce rate.
Okay, I can buy that. The only pushback I'd give, and maybe this is, you know, where we bet lunch or something on the outcome of our predictions, but I kind of feel that women are more hesitant to get into relationships now with people whose, like, political opinions disgust them. But I kind of anticipate that a lot of people who are in long-term relationships have made their peace with the political opinions of their partners or agree with them on a lot of fronts.
I think that that could be true, but I think that a lot of it settled after 2020, and I think that this is just going to reignite those fights.
That's totally possible, and I do anticipate this is going to be a much more dog whistle loud enough for humans to hear election, where, like, the rights of women are going to be, like, taken for granted to an even greater degree than any of the prior elections. There's going to be discussions about taking away birth control. There's going to be discussions about, you know, preventing sex ed in schools across America. There's going to be shutdowns of, you know, queer people all across this country and a lot of conservative states, roughly emulating what we've already seen in Florida. I can buy what you're saying. I think that that has legs. It's just going to be an amplification of everything we've already seen, but to a far greater scale than what we've seen before. Yay.
Yay.
I guess related to that, I kind of predict there's going to be a lot of political violence this election. Shockingly, there was not a lot in 2020, and I'm predicting there's going to be a lot more cases involving that, because I think for individuals now, you're having conversations about things like AI nudes and politicians who want to ruin your life by preventing you from having an abortion or ruin your daughter's life. And, you know, parents are overly protective of, you know, how that's going to impact their families. I think there's going to be violence directed both towards people of the opposite political persuasion, but also a lot of, like, local politicians who are doing their best to, like, either enforce or not enforce certain laws. Unfortunately, I just don't see how we continue without that happening. I would like that to not happen. But simultaneously, I just think we're at the point where, like, typically people can rationalize what political parties do is, like, not impacting them. And we're getting to the point where, like, a major political party, namely the Republican Party, is passing laws left and right that impact half the population or more. And that's big, right? You know, before people could be like, oh, it was just affecting the trans people. They're only 1% of the population, which is still a shit ton of the population. But now, like, it is impossible to ignore the real impacts these things have on people's lives on a daily basis. So don't want to be right, but I do think that's going to be an unfortunate trend this coming year.
Okay, I'll match you, and I'll say I think that there's going to be a rise in political dating apps like the Right Ooh. Stuff, but it's going to be for both sides. So there's going to be more like the Right Stuff, and then there's going to be more left-only dating apps.
That's interesting, because when we talked about the Right Stuff, one of the things we said is conservatives are willing to date people across the political spectrum because they, like, don't really think that their opinions are harming people. They don't understand why liberals don't want to date them. And I think a lot of liberals, leftists, progressives are deeply offended by dating someone on the opposite side of the political spectrum. So a dating app geared directly towards them might be popular. The one problem I would say that these apps would have is that there's going to be a lot of people on there pretending to have the same opinions that everyone else has. But I can imagine there being some kind of, you know, verification or like voting system where, like, I went on a date with this guy and there were issues that he's not someone who should be on here, etc. So I agree with you. I do think that's going to be a likely scenario. I think we'll definitely cover them if we see any of those. I believe that there's going to be a lot more political campaigns on dating apps. This is something that already happened in 2020, where like the Biden campaign was like making profiles on Hinge, and you'd be swiping and it'd just be like, do you want to swipe on Joe Biden? Do you want to support him? But, you know, all these apps want to make money. All of them want to monetize. All of them want, you know, a reliable source of income. And if a political campaign, Republican or Democrat, comes to them and is like, hey, can we do something on your platform in terms of advertising? They're not going to say no, right? And I think, unfortunately, as we've just said, you know, a lot of people are frustrated with politics. A lot of people are upset. And besides AI stuff, this is going to be another thing that pushes people off of major dating apps. This is going to be another source of frustration where it's like, I just don't want to think about politics when I'm dating. And here it is, you know, a bunch of campaigns are rubbing it in my face that, no, this is still an ongoing thing that you need to care about.
Okay. Keep going. That was my only three dating trends. I didn't know you were going to have like nine.
Okay. I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend all of these are like too distinct from one another. They're very similar in terms of themes. I think there is going to be more high profile posts on like Twitter and Instagram, and then even like New York Times editorials from people who are like, we've got a problem with dating. And the problem is women haven't lowered their standards enough. We already saw one from the Washington Post, which I don't know, we might discuss at some point. This came out in early December, and I know this episode's going to drop in January, so maybe it'll be outdated by then. But yeah, a lot of clever intellectuals are going to be like, well, women, put up with this shit. And they're not going to be like, men, improve, because so few people ever are like, men need to improve. They're just like, women need to lower their standards. Unfortunately, that is a trend we continue to see. And given problems with demographics and problems with ever greater fractures in our political landscape, it's going to be a common theme in editorials in the coming year. I think there's going to be some AI related scandals for pretty much most political campaigns. I think there's going to be more weaponizing of like nudes and fake sex tapes. There already was a thing in, I think, Virginia where a candidate had like, I don't know the exact details, but the candidate was running for office and a video was found of her and her husband having sex somewhere online. And this might have like ruined her candidacy, or it could have just been the demographics of the area. But if you can fake nudes, if you can fake video of your like opponents and it makes them look bad and that it influences elections, why wouldn't people do it? Right. This is just logical to me. Unfortunately, it's a technology that's easily abused, very few regulations on. It's something that can give you like a major lead in a political race. I think Democrats might be reticent to use it, but might just lean in. And whether or not it's the campaigns doing it or people completely unrelated to the campaign who just support the candidates, it has the same effect, right? And so this technology is going to like come out, and it's going to be a lot more elections across the country that are decided arguably by AI generated content that makes people look bad. It doesn't necessarily need to be sex stuff. It could be, you know, them saying the N-word. It could be them, you know, making an offensive statement about, you know, their district or whatever. But I do think that especially for women candidates, there's a lot more women candidates running, showing up naked online or showing up having sex online makes a lot of people less likely to vote for you. I don't like that that's the case, but that does seem to be the trend.
All of your predictions are really sad, Joel.
I got one at the end. I'm saving one good one for the end.
Okay.
I think a lot of states, if not like counties and districts, are going to start outlawing AI-generated content. I think we're already seeing a rise of like really scary stuff being done with it. Especially in like schools, you know, a lot of young women are being harassed with like fake AI nudes of themselves being distributed by teen boys in their class. If you can find me a story about teen girls creating nudes of teen boys and passing them around, I'm more than happy to discuss it, but I do think it's pretty much the opposite right now. And so I think a lot of local municipalities as well as states are going to, you know, try to crack down on this. And as usual, they're going to go too far, and the laws are going to criminalize a lot of normal, unassuming, not evil behavior. But yeah, there's definitely going to be a movement on the AI art. There's going to be a lot of conversations about the ethics of AI art this coming year. Not necessarily, you know, in a way that actually gets people money if their stuff was ripped off and turned into AI art, but definitely conversations about like how it's impacting the movie industry, TV industry, society as a whole. I think we're going to see those.
Okay.
And then last one, Naomi, and this is something we are already starting to see that I think is going to be an emerging trend. It aligns nicely with a lot of stuff that Bumble and The Knot said, and that is we are going to see a return or a rise in-person matchmaking. And what I mean by that is people are getting frustrated with dating apps. Dating apps are becoming increasingly difficult to use. We can reasonably anticipate there's going to be a lot of problems with them. People are less willing to spend time filtering through hundreds, if not thousands, of potential matches trying to find someone who meets all of their standards. Thus, I think there is going to be a rise to fill that vacuum of matchmaking. And already this is happening to a limited extent. I've linked an article in The Atlantic from August of this year talking about how lots of local matchmakers are becoming increasingly popular. It applies for certain demographic groups more than others. Like, you know, I know a lot of Indian people find it helpful to, like, meet other Indian people that will, like, meet their parents' cultural expectations that they can, you know, be happy with in order to, you know, do arranged marriages or whatever. But I can also see it applying for, like, the Seattle area, the Phoenix area, you know, having these local services that connect like-minded individuals who share, you know, common passions within that area. And rather than spending all this time on dating apps, you pay a small flat fee. They go through their database. They find, you know, five people who you might be interested in. You look at their photos. You say, I want to go on a date with them. They set something up. You go on a date with them. You like it. Great. You go on more dates without them. You don't like it. You go back to them. They give you a credit and they, you know, generate some more results. It's a pretty simple business model. It involves a lot of big data in a way that like makes sense. It aligns closely with like a lot of the data collection that's already occurred in dating apps in the past couple of years. It solves a lot of the problems with the existing dating market. And I think ultimately the relationships formed with that might be more solid than just randomly selecting people and hoping for the best. How quickly is it going to rise? No idea. But I do think it's coming. And I think 2024 is going to be a year you hear a lot more conversations about that.
Okay, I can see that happening. I feel like a lot of people are kind of just waiting around to like find their perfect person and they haven't on dating apps. So they might, I feel like they'll definitely lean more into like their parents or their siblings or their friends matchmaking. Like there'll be a lot more blind dates this year, I feel like.
I saw some crazy stat. I don't know if I can find it again, but it's like, a lot of relationships up until the early 2000s were formed through recommendations by friend or family. You know, up until the rise of the internet, a lot of people just didn't have an ability to filter through, you know, personal ads or videotaped dating or whatever. And so they'd just be like, oh, I know a guy named Bill. Why don't you go see Bill or whatever? And that's how a lot of relationships formed. And then starting in the early 2000s, now it's like 90% of all people who meet each other, they do so through online dating. They do so through any form of, you know, meeting on Facebook, meeting on a dedicated dating app, meeting in Craigslist, misconnections, whatever. And so I wonder if that trend's going to reverse as it becomes increasingly clear that just dating apps don't work for so many people. There's so many problems with them. They're so frustrating. And I think especially for people of our generation who have spent many years on them and often have not yielded good results or have connected with people and those relationships haven't worked out, if they're going to feel like they need to rely upon friends and family again, even though it's less convenient, even though that's a lower circle of people to pick from, it's more likely those people will be able to connect them with someone from the get-go whose values and beliefs align with their own.
I know this woman named Susan, and she's got a cat. I think I should set you up with her.
I'm a married man, Naomi. Also, Susan is Lauren's mother's name, so that's kind of weird. Don't like that.
Okay, we're done talking about this and giving out more personal information.
Okay, I'll blur out those names at the end.
Okay, cool.
So, those are our trends, predictions for 2024. 2020 door is going to be a great year, people. We anticipate only the best. Make sure you listen to some of the advice if you're still dating. Sorry, it's a terrible market out there. There are some tips and tricks you can use in order to make yourself more appealing. List your zodiac symbols. Mention how much you like dogs. Subtly lean into the fact you do community service on occasion. And you should do better than average.
We wish you a year full of prosperity and love and peace. And let's get this year started.
I agree. And you know, there's no better way to get this started, Naomi, than by donating on our Patreon. That's right. We have a Patreon. Patreon.com/DateTheseGuys is a wonderful source of entertainment. Behind the scenes footage, videos of all these episodes. You get to see Joel picking his nose. You get to see his ridiculous t-shirts. You get to see him hold up like photos on his phone to show Naomi on occasion. It's wonderful. We do behind the scenes, as you know, we discuss, you know, hey, how do we do this cool holiday card that went out to all of our patrons in 2023? You could get one like that if only you had signed up on time. Well, 2024, you still got time. We haven't even started planning that one yet. Patreon.com, people. But, I mean, as always, like, shit sucks. No one has money. We understand that. Don't donate if you don't have money. Please go and support local institutions. Use your resources sparingly. If you can provide proof you do that, we're more than happy to hook you up to some of our bonus content. Just, you know, be nice to us too. Like us on Spotify. Don't like us, but provide some good criticism. Whatever. We're not going to hold your feet to the fire. You're your own boss. Don't listen to us. We're not your mom or your god. Do what makes you feel good and be nice to the people in your life.
Let's got this year. Oh, that doesn't work. Have a great week, people. Start off this year on a good note. Go eat some good food. Spend some time with your loved ones. We love you very much. Tune in next week for unknown content. Woohoo!
I'm excited. Many thanks for the use of our theme music, which is the song Drop by Ketza. You can find more of their music online at ketza.uk. You can also find Date These Guys online on Twitter and Instagram at Date These Guys or visit datetheseguys.org. If you have questions for the podcast or want to be a wealthy sugar parent, send an email to datetheseguys@gmail.com. If you're looking to make an impact in the world, this show strongly recommends Planned Parenthood, a nonprofit organization that provides reproductive health care in the United States. Planned Parenthood provides birth control, long-acting reversible contraceptive implants, clinical breast examinations, pregnancy screenings, prenatal care, testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections, and abortions. They also do great work for those who are lower income. 4/5 of their clients are at or below 50% of the federal poverty line. Both Joel and Naomi are monthly donors to Planned Parenthood. We hope you will be too.